Analytics Moments. In this episode today, we will be talking about B2B marketplaces. We shall cover aspects around what is a B2B marketplace, why is the sector so hot, what are the different themes that we have been looking at, how does a good B2B business look like, what are the fundamentals, and we will share some portfolio learnings that we have seen across the companies that we have invested in. And for this discussion, I have Sudipto with me, who has been leading B2B marketplaces and have been tracking the sector very closely since past 6 years. And even at my time here, I have looked at the sector, and the idea was just to bring together all the learnings and share it with the viewers.
Thank you so much, Nitisha. I think as a fund, we have spent a lot of time on B2B. I remember when I joined in 2016, the first sector that I started looking was B2B and logistics. And it has been 6 years looking at these sectors. And I think the time for B2B has truly arrived in the last 12 to 14 months. I think not only in terms of funding, but also in terms of quality of the founders who are coming and building the business, adoption of tech and digitization across MSMEs and sort of small factories and stuff. So very exciting time for India as a whole. And some of that is powered by what our MSMEs are doing, which is why B2B is booming.
Of course. So actually, Sudipto, there's so much hype around the term B2B, right? So just for the interest of viewers who are probably not acquainted with the space, if you could just talk about what is a B2B marketplace? What is B2B?
Sure. So B2B is business-to-business transaction, right? Typically, most of the famous names we've seen in the startup world are B2C businesses, which is business-to-consumer. If you are shopping from Flipkart, that's a B2C company you are buying your clothes from. If you're ordering, say, food from Zomato or Swiggy, you're essentially, that's again a B2C company in the food delivery space. You're getting a cab from Ola, that's a B2C company in the ride hailing space. So these are all B2C companies where the end customer is the consumer. But before a consumer can consume a product or a service, there are multiple layers in the supply chain where there are a lot of business-to-business transactions which we cover in B2B. For example, the clothes that we are wearing, right? Either we would have bought it from a brand or we would have bought it from a retail store. So the retail store to us or from the brand to us directly through their D2C channel or B2C channel is B2C commerce or D2C commerce. But where is the brand or retailer getting the product from? They are getting this product through a factory, and in between the factory there are multiple different middlemen. So the factory to the brand or the factory to the retailer is one B2B commerce that's happening. Now think about the factory. How is the factory producing the shirt? They are getting obviously yarn, raw material from another mill. They are getting machinery from someone who is providing them. They are getting MRO packaging material who are providing them to the factory. Right? So the B2B is now, the factory is now engaging in multiple B2B transactions as well. And if you continue to go downstream, you will end up with either imported products or pure raw material, organic raw material, inorganic raw material getting produced, and everything finally coming together to give the end customer a product. All these individual transactions in between constitute B2B. And when we look at B2B marketplaces, we look across all of them, which is your retailer to the end consumer, then finished good marketplace, which is from factory or the farm to the brand or the retailer, and then the raw material marketplace as well.
Of course, that makes a lot of sense, Sudipto, that there are so many middlemen involved that there's so much scope for disruption in each of the part of the supply chain, right? And probably that's why we hear that B2B is like 4 to 5 times the size of B2C market, not just in India, but even globally.
So just if you look at the stat, right, as an Indian consumer, we broadly consume, say, $1 trillion of goods every year. And this is like a broad estimate, but we consume $100 billion of milk and milk products. Then we consume $100 billion of fruits and vegetables. Then $70-80 billion of animal protein, which is seafood, fish, eggs, and sort of poultry and meat and stuff like that. Then you add another $100-120 billion of staples, which is rice, wheat, paddy, soybean. Then you add another $100 billion of FMCG, which is your biscuits and chocolates and stuff like that. That's broadly 500-550 billion. On top of that, the lifestyle products of $150 billion, which is your sort of apparel, footwear, accessories, watches, and another $150 billion of electronics, which is smartphones, TVs, your appliances, and then pharma, and then home decor. And if you do that, there's $1 trillion stack of what the Indian consumer consumes. Yeah. Now, behind this $1 trillion stack, there is $1.5 to $2 trillion of B2B transactions that's empowering the $1 trillion stack. And from 2005-06 to 2017-18, all the innovation that the country saw was in the end consumer stack. Why? Because the end customers obviously got digitized first. They had the propensity to pay more. And which is where all the customers, all the companies that were created were catering to B2C. As the B2C customer got digitized, slowly the B2B supply chains also started getting digitized. And although in B2C, and we'll discuss some of it, you generally have large horizontal marketplaces, in B2B you can have multiple vertical marketplaces. So here we are seeing $2 trillion of B2B transactions happening with multiple different cuts where there could be a lot of marketplaces created, which is why this sector is so interesting now.
Of course, with so many models, and like in the podcast ahead, we'll talk about how do we think of those models. But even before that, Sudipto, one thing that I really wanted to understand was that, you know, record funding has gone into this sector in the last 1 to 2 years, and we have seen multiple unicorns come up, right? Our own portfolio of business, or Zwork, or InfraMarket, right? Multiple companies that have come up. And even as Matrix, we have doubled down in this particular sector in terms of our investments. So because you were explaining business to retail, we have taken multiple bets like Captain Fresh, Egro, Farmart, Savio, Business, right? There's so many bets that we've taken, and even in the cross-border, there are a bunch of them which are in stealth right now. But so why so much of this focus on the sector now, right? What is the why now of the space? We talk about COVID, but how much of it is sustainable? So what do you think are the different factors? And out of them, which are the ones which you think are there to stay?
Fair. So we discussed $1 trillion of Indian consumer spend. That's huge. Like $1 trillion of consumption spend is very rare across different geographies, which is why India as a startup hub is very exciting and promising, right? And that $1 trillion is obviously growing rapidly as India's GDP continues to scale. Now, the backbone of India, however, has always been MSMEs. It could be your end retailers of the Kirana stores, and India has anywhere between 40 to 60 million Kirana stores empowering this $1 trillion of retail. Or these are millions and millions of farmers who work in agri and who help in producing all the agri commodities we consume. Or there are hundreds and thousands of MSMEs or small factories which are actually producing and manufacturing goods either for domestic consumption or for exports. Now, if you look at how technology evolution has happened in the country, in the initial period, obviously the end customer started using products, tech products for their own sort of use cases. It generally starts with entertainment use case, then you have e-commerce, and sort of then different other products start coming. Now, what has changed in the last 5-6 years? If you look at the MSME, there are multiple different things that have happened to them. They used to be in a very informal economy where they used to do transactions with people they already knew, and they used to do most of those transactions in cash. Now, in the last 4-5 years, what has happened? First, there was GST. Because of that, a lot of SMEs had to formalize themselves to take GST input credit. Second, there was demonetization and UPI that happened together, which meant a lot of cash transactions that they were doing now actually ended up becoming payments, digital payments that they started to do.
Yeah.
Then third, Jio happened. Now, they were part of the formal economy. They started doing online transactions, and now they had access to cheap internet. And fourth, COVID happened. The middlemen that they were used to actually working on a daily basis, because of COVID, unfortunately, could not do face-to-face sort of transactions and meetings. So combined, because of these 4-5 shocks in the last sort of, 5-6 years, the Indian MSME changed. Now they had technology and a smartphone, they had cheap data, they had become part of the formal economy because of GST, and they were comfortable now transacting on online marketplaces and trusting sort of online tech-enabled marketplaces, which was never possible 4-5 years back.
Yes.
For example, in 2016-17, when I had just joined Matrix, right, and when I used to go on the ground, meet these factories, do diligence for startups, you enter a factory and there was no technology, there was this one desktop. And because we as investors used to go, then the owner of the factory would say, go call this particular guy who knows computer science, and that guy will come and open the desktop and show, sir, dekho hum itna sara tech use karte hain. Now I'm sure, and you should also share with people, but now when you go and do diligence on the ground, right? You go to a factory, everybody's on their smartphone. They're scanning barcodes.
Yeah.
They're uploading documents directly. They're taking orders real time.
Yeah.
So on the ground, things have changed. It's not only startup environment and funding. On the ground, factories have actually adopted tech. On the ground, farmers have actually adopted tech. And that is seeing so much of disruption in this space.
No, I mean, I completely agree, right? And as we also discussed earlier, that there was this one company and had to diligence and I visited some factories, right? So even I'm seeing the change in the 2 years only. Earlier, it used to be us going and asking, how are you liking this product? And then telling that, okay, we'll probably use or maybe not, right? This time it was right opposite. Like the factory owner sat me down for an hour and said that this product is good, like you're already using this, but can you also give me these other 4-5 things? Don't you meet companies which are also probably doing something on this, you know, end? So not just they have payment intent, but even the type of products that they want, more than a push, rather now there's a pull from the factories. Can you please help us with these XYZ things also? We are ready to pay, we are ready to experiment, and we are already there. I have my son with me who can teach me all those things. There's second generation coming which are ready to take up all of this, right? And even in terms of COVID, I think some of it is already even reflecting in the numbers, right? In December 21, India recorded its highest ever exports, and most of it was coming from MSMEs. So I completely agree with you that even the COVID tailwinds or the globalization part, the formalization part, that's very much true and it's there to stay, right?
So that's a very interesting point to touch. So first we discussed about the Indian economy and digitization of Indian SMEs, right? And now it's clear that there are so many SMEs, they're using tech, they're ready to be part of the formal economy and they're trusting online marketplaces. Add on top of that, what's happening globally geopolitically? Every major economy is looking at China plus one strategy post-COVID. And China has been for the longest period of time the manufacturing hub for the entire world. Now you're looking for countries which can do manufacturing well, has cheap sort of cost of labor and resources abundant, right? And India becomes a hotspot. That's one. Second, we are middle of the Ukraine-Russia conflict. Add that on top and every country is realizing that they need to diversify their supply chain. So there's a broader realignment of supply chain that's happening. And India, because of our ability to sort of now manufacture well, our raw materials, startups sort of coming, digitization, tech, push from the government is at the center of that. So not only are we digitizing existing supply chains, actually the production for the country is significantly ramping up.
Yeah.
And you have this increased amount of demand that the world wants from India. And where a lot of new innovative companies are coming and saying, we will get this demand done from India, we will create this layer of trust and quality, and there are enough number of Indian MSMEs which are actually hungry to go and do it. For example, you should look at the stock prices of all these specialty chemical companies. They have been booming over the last 2-3 years, right?
Yeah.
If you go to in the chemical industry, you will realize that people are actually now putting up factories with excess capacity, anticipating the demand will increase. So Indian MSMEs have also become smarter. They are sort of setting up capacity ahead of time. Now, how do you fulfill this capacity? You need new sources and new channels for it, which is where all the B2B marketplaces actually come into picture.
No, that's very fair. And even in all our conversations with the global sourcing heads of all the companies, right, they have all been talking about de-risking their supply chains, increasing their sourcing destinations. And like, if the share has to move from China, then as you said, like India, because of all the advantages that India has, it's a perfect land grabbing opportunity, some of which is already reflecting in our manufacturing numbers and the like 400 billion exports that the country is supposed to lock this year. One thing, Sugata, we talked about all the value that a marketplace has to add, right? But the one thing that probably in general is not focused a lot when it comes to B2B is tech, right? So probably the online penetration or the digital penetration in B2B business in India is 0.5 to 1%, right? Far less than what it is in US, probably around 13%. Still, we have seen large businesses getting created. And even the companies which are unicorns or 5 billion, 7 billion, whatever, right? Even their use of tech in today's time after they have become so big is not as much, right? So as investors, generally, if it's any other sector, we are over-indexed on what's the tech, what's the network effect, right? How does it grow exponentially? When it comes to B2B, is the answer that tech is not as important. I mean, you can build it later. Initially, it's all about getting the transaction done and getting the ops right. Or is there really a role of tech which in today's world is getting under indexed, right? So, I mean, what do you think is going to be the eventual role of tech? Because as of now, it hasn't been highlighted a lot in the investor conversations or the founder conversations, be it whatsoever.
There's, all of this is happening because of tech. There's a why now to it, and the beginning of the why now was formalization of the economy and adoption of tech. Without tech, you cannot scale, you cannot be non-linear, and I'll cover a little bit of it right now. Are these tech businesses? No, these are tech-enabled businesses. Ola, Swiggy, Flipkart are also tech-enabled businesses. You have a technology or an app on the customer-facing side on which through which the customers actually order, but everything that's happening is operations on the ground. These are all full-stack businesses, right? Full-stack businesses will always be operations heavy, but because of tech, you can actually scale full-stack businesses and do them well. Now, let's see where does tech come, right? The first thing is, obviously, people think tech is ordering, and what do you order on? For me, tech is what enables you to scale. In B2B companies, typically if you see in India, there have been a lot of 1,000 crore, 2,000 crore B2B companies. Nobody has been able to scale. Why are you not able to scale? You are not able to scale is because if you want to scale beyond a certain point in time, what all you need to do? You need to aggregate supply. You need to monitor quality inventory available in that supply. You need technology to do QC. You need technology to keep order management. Then you want to transport that product from point A to point B. You can manage 20-30 trucks in Excel. You cannot manage 400 trucks a day on Excel. You need technology to figure out where logistics is happening. Third, you will always give products to somebody. You need to figure out what does the customer want, which is demand prediction, figuring out what is the right product and recommend the right product. There is tech in that. Then in B2B, whatever you do, there is an element of collections. Because once you have provided the product, you need to collect money back. Underwriting collections is tech driven. So each part of the supply chain is actually orchestrated through tech. And without tech, it would not have been possible. For example, in our portfolio, Vigro and Captain Fresh at the core are perishable supply chains. In perishable supply chains, you need to do two things very well. One, you procure at scale, but more importantly, you do QC and you grade that supply. Once you've graded that supply, then you can do matchmaking. Gradation of supply is pure technology, and without tech, you could not do it, which is why Vigro and Captain Fresh 5 years back would have been very difficult to build. You look at Farmart. Farmart is in the business of procuring from the farmer without procuring from the farmer,
yeah.
Which is done through their SaaS tool. You take that SaaS tool out of the picture, Farmart could have never been created, and $0 to $100 million profitably in a year would have never been created. You take business. Business is in the business of A, digitizing the factory, but more importantly, mapping what a factory needs with the right retailer. Now, to understand what does a retailer in a small part of the country want, and then showing that right product from a catalog of hundreds of SKUs and thousands of SKUs is actually tech. Of businesses is heavily focused on underwriting credits. It's transactions, but on top of that, also providing credit on top of it. This level of credit underwriting could have never been possible without data and using technology to underwrite using that data, right? So when we invest in a company, the simple rule of thumb that I see is if I leave my job today and go try to build it tomorrow, will I be able to build it? If the answer is yes, then there's no reason to invest. Most of the companies we've invested are founders with 10,000 hours in the space, with unique insights about that space that nobody else had, were ready to get their hands dirty, and were using tech, not in the traditional sense of creating an app through which you order, but using tech to orchestrate the supply chain and solve for pain points which offline businesses have not been able to solve yet. And because they were using tech and people were adopting tech, they were able to do and create the non-linear.
So just a sub-part to it, right? Like, so there are two kinds of models that we have seen emerging, especially if we talk about the seed stage companies, right? Wherein the model is still evolving, seed or series A. There are a couple of companies which are product first, right? Which start with a tech product, and once people are sticky on that platform, then they start the trade process, right? And then there are second kind of companies where probably 99% of the focus of both the founders and investors have been, right? Wherein you start doing the transactions in an offline way, And once you know you have enough going, then you build tech enablement around it, as you rightly said, right? So by far the focus has always been in the second bucket, right? Do you think the time for the first bucket is here and now? What do you think about it?
So it will always depend on the supply chain that we're building for. If it is towards the retailer, right? A retailer almost behaves like the end customer. So if it's closer to the retailer, then tech from day one is very easy. However, the further you go deeper into the supply chain, right? On day one, you asking somebody to order from an app or using technology is very difficult. And there probably you will start more offline and then go online. So on day one, you don't need to have technology. You can do things on Excel till you get to a particular scale. But the large company happens because there's something that tech is doing that the offline world can't do, which is critical. And knowing that beforehand is very important. And any supply chain you want to scale, finally scaling a supply chain is a working capital credit management company and a QC logistics management company. And for doing both of these two things properly, you will need technology. But how you start is a function of where you are starting, the founder background. And we are very open across all of that, which you have seen, right?
Yeah.
At the end state, you need tech. You don't need tech on day one, which you are fairly cognizant of.
Which is fair.
We are not investing in a company because it has better user experience.
Exactly.
So it is not user experience. It's technology that is enabling scale. It has nothing to do with how fancy the user experience is. Actually, in B2B, the less fancy, the simple, the more simple the user experience is, the better it is. Because the end customer wants functionality. They don't care about what's the color in the buttons.
Fair. No, we just hear people, like, even in my discussions around, they keep on mentioning, right, probably in B2B you do not even need tech, and that's what we have seen in companies. So it was very important to put it that, you know, maybe starting may you do not, but ultimately if it's not tech enabled, you can just not become big, right? Just the last question on this theme that we wanted to cover was, and you actually briefly touched upon it, around the founder archetype, right? So I think it has been very interesting that in the past 1 year, right, like whenever my colleagues from, like, say, I mean, past colleagues from consulting or like fellow friends from VC or the traditional industry, right, they call and they're like, you know, what are the white spaces in B2B? And I'm like, just a second, right? I mean, this is not very normal. This is not the most sexy sector to build in, right? So how are you seeing the archetype of founders which are starting up in this space changing? I mean, do you think people are just trying to start up here because they see that there's a lot of funding? If you just capture a white space, to see if the money jayega, because that's other kind of answers that, you know, we hear. So what do you think the change has been? And given the change, what are the kind of archetypes that you are bullish on?
So first, I think it's good that you are getting those calls, which means the sector has come of age. And I genuinely believe, and Avnish keeps on saying, right, digital nation building. For the country to truly progress, we need MSMEs and B2Bs and farmers and the backbone of the country to progress. They need to become more profitable and they need to scale faster. They need to cater both domestic and international demand. So B2B doing well is core to the country doing well. So it's really great that because of few amazing founders who have built phenomenal businesses in this space, there has been a lot of capital that has come, which has created this vicious cycle where people want to build in B2B. So which is a great place to be, right? Now, B2B is not an easy business to build. It is not a fancy business to build. You have to spend a lot of time in the farms and in the factories and solving supply chain problems. So the only point that we keep in mind when we're investing is, does the person have enough exposure to that space? It doesn't matter what background, which company that they work with. If you see our B2B portfolio, we have...
It has a mix of everything.
It has a mix of everything, all different pedigrees. But generally, the people that we've invested in have spent some time in that domain. Like Sid and Chaitanya of business, unki papa ki factory thi in this space. They had sort of internalized the problem, right? Captain Fresh, before this, Uttam was with Nikanti, one of India's largest seafood exporters. Farma.
They have been doing it since 5-6 years.
They have been doing this for 5-6 years. Their family background in farming and lending and collection. If you look at Vigro, you have Shobhit and Praneet, who have years of experience in, you know, through ITC and Agrostar, have seen this space, right? So we generally have looked upon founders, doesn't matter what the background or pedigree is, but are you truly passionate about this space? Have you spent enough number of years to understand that problem? And are you willing to give the next 10 years when things won't be that easy, right? That's the archetype. Beyond that, we are respectful of founders across all backgrounds. Pedigree really does not matter. What matters is your domain experience, having spent 10,000 hours in the space, and your willingness to grind it out for the next 5 to 10 years. When things are not that happening for B2B the way it is today, but still building a long-lasting, enduring legacy company.
Which is completely fair. And that actually probably, you know, helps the viewers and the potential founders who are looking to start up that it's not the easiest space to build in, right? Not something that you create a product, you launch it, and then you see how it has been performing. Like, you really need to spend hours and months to understand what the space is, go on the field, and then build something around it.
And it's not like in B2C you can A-B test with
exactly
a million customers and get to a result. In farming, one cycle is essentially 6 months. So you can't A-B test in a minute, right? So you need to have a lot more patience in B2B and know the
lay of the land. And I think even on the customer persona, right, in other sectors, people are free to experiment. Say if it's EdTech, right, like I'll try an app and I'll be like, okay, is it good or not? So it's okay for the customers to experiment.
Yeah.
In a B2B, for like a 100 crore company, right, I can't ask them that, can you please give 5% of procurement to me, a new player who doesn't know anything about the space, right? So the trust and the magnitude actually of trust that you're reposing on the platform is too important for someone to just give it a try out of nowhere. So that helps.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/matrixmoments. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.